decided that the graduate assembly had no restrictions on their funding, that they were autonomous as far as their money goes. They could spend their money as they please in accordance with their charter, and that the only limitation they had was that they could not ask the Senate to pass new laws that were in violation of the Senate's financial restrictions.
My question is, do you believe that section has been affected by the study president of the Misha file, the figure of the parties? Do you believe that I mean, that was going on?
No, I don't think that the federal legislators did not yet vote it. And that's where the irreparable harm would have taken. The irreparable harm would have taken place in the form of the students being the ballot, the legal and potentially and later proof being impartial and accurate. So I think aiming the status quo by making sure that irreparable harm is not taking place by the students not being the actions that were otherwise
happened.
Thank you.
your question, as in your capacity as a chair, but, the office that had the cell phone ring that early in the morning, and instead of the caller ID being marked, it was some random number, you want to pull my phone, would you have honestly answered the phone that early in the morning and asked it as you did?
Well, for lack of a better term, I did that to the phone, too. Sometimes my mother calls and I ignore it. Sometimes the grandmother and I answer this morning. I got a random call at 6:30 a.m. and I answered because I was in the grocery. So, you know, it depends. You know, as I say, I can't guarantee what I would have done. That morning, there are many mornings that you can ask, I know they're not here, they can't ask the office. You can ask a lot of my friends, a lot of my parents. Most of the time, I don't even like answering my phone. But it just happened that, you know, sometimes I answer, sometimes I don't. And I can't speculate why that morning I chose to pick up the phone. But I did, and that was the process of the call, and to answer that question.
Senator, I actually have a few questions referring to the President Lee, which is a common defense statement. The first question is, in an earlier case, in everything related with it, when a preliminary injunction was issued, were you informed before the preliminary were you informed by the injunction to be issued to you before it was issued, and do you put that as a violation of your
I believe Bobby told before you it was a while ago, but the Bobby told was here.
Hopefully I'll focus back in. Yeah, I don't need to focus. So go ahead.
Okay, this is the other one.
contract that will be done on the election council. If you staff consider the irreparable loss of students, and staff students that find the position in the first place, would that be more irreparable harm than students?
Okay, so part one of the answer is, that that's not relevant to the students, so I'm going to ask you first. Part one is that it's not relevant to the voting because the issue is whether or not she wants to be here. You're questioning the council's initial judgment of issues of the campus. That's not an issue for them. But, to answer your question anyway, yes, that was considered. The problem is, again, like, what perhaps will have to affect the communicator is with equal protection, as soon as the society defines the references for employee data funding, they have to be asked that question again, like in Title 4.10.3, in an accurate and impartial manner. If they're not asked that question, then even those two, according to the Council of Representatives, even those comments, even that referendum, right, even those students who supported it originally, are being harmed. Because even the other students, all students need it, whether they support the economy or not, it doesn't actually reflect the content of the referendum, which is what the Council will be found. If the text is not impartial and if it's not accurate, then it's illegal. So though it's not relevant as an issue here, yes, the council evaluated that and found that it was going to be disenfranchising and harming irreparably thousands and thousands of students by them being unduly, by their teams being unduly intimidated by the illegal and partial language of the referendum as it exists.
Also, if there are guests in the room that would like to ask questions, the discount is allotted only for council members. So you can ask council members if you're in time. Okay, so never mind. No questions are allowed.
Yeah, it's not in our injunction right here, but it is in our decision to alter the evidence. We need the council ask the election council and the Senate organize another forum for the voting. So our intent was never sent to voting. We had no issue with the content of the referendum. That was not our consideration. We weren't trying to disenfranchise voting. We were wanting to vote. We want people to be able to have a voice. We want people to partake in democracy. But in order for that to be the case, in order for democracy to be upheld, questions have to be legal, they have to be in accordance with the Constitution and the bylaws. So it was never our intention to say, no, we don't want you to vote on this. It was, we would like you to be able to vote on this in the most legal form possible. And if it can't be at this point, then we're prepared. We don't want irreparable harm. We're prepared to issue the injunction now to make sure that nobody is harmed, that irreparable harm is not deployed, and that rather you can vote on this at a later point, whether it's a week, 2 weeks, or whatever that may be, which is not under our jurisdiction. That's under your jurisdiction, your election council jurisdiction, to deal with that. But we weren't trying to stop voting per se. We were just taking the questions off the ballot for that moment until we could determine whether they were legal, as they were. And so as they say in our decision, you know, go ahead and have a second week of voting. We'd be delighted. We would like people to have a solid
okay, and also, it's an evidence if the ones that say the first election council name is presented, friends and graduates on the upcoming referendum. So if you wanted to read more of the logic of what the council, what went through their mind, determining if it's presented, you can find it there. So again, I urge you to read it, but keep in mind it's not relevant to this one.
How does an EPI differ from from a natural healing with regard to the arguments and really.
Objection, let's just repetitive, and specifically the procedure, which I sincerely hope that every time you're.
So the section for one thing hasn't been recognized because you haven't stated any of the sections that are on there. If it is redundant.
Objection on the whole.
Okay.
I would like to address that. This is in fact one of the most crucial things that we need to discuss in this case. The only reason I ask this repetitive question is because it is my feeling that not all jurors jointly understand the state of affairs with regard to the DCI and doctors and healing in this matter.
I mean, I think these are very clearly outlined in the FAA, and I really do appreciate clarifying questions. So I hope that there are centers that have questions about this, they talk to each center individually so they can clarify. But it's very specific right now. And as much as I do want everyone to get their bang for their buck, as much as you have questions asked, I would appreciate if we had all our questions asked before we went anywhere.
And
then, I would draw my objection.
Actually, I'd like to actually be from that state. It is very relevant. I have participated in the previous deliberations. I have sat there, you know, despite the fact that I actually had to turn in the first science paper a few days late because I didn't get it finished because I was deliberating online. So I sat there for 2 hours. I'm not a very quick typer, so I wasn't necessarily putting my views in. I was rather watching how my counsel, you know, understood the issues at hand, trying to absorb what was going on, and interrupting and giving my perspective when I thought it was necessary. But I knew what the council would need. I knew that at least 7 out of 9 of us believed in this correct course of action. If I had any doubts in my mind of that, then maybe I would have gone ahead and contacted another member. But I was 100% confident in my mind that I was acting on the will of the council, given the fact that just hours before, they gone over all the issues.
Second case, I believe, He was in charge of frontline. Police say that the tenant was operating a number. I froze all vehicles of the tenant and say you guys can't do anything until he has a hearing on the matter or a defender is brought in. In the third case, that was from the course of the city's legal clinic, that they were operating under a new legal constitution, which had not been approved by the Senate. You know, I didn't go through and compare all the evidence and whatnot. They were looking to just freeze the situation on the ground and to go in and have a very lengthy process of discovering what the facts are and what the law lies. And once that is all done, then the CDI for the regular inspection.
In retrospect, would you have changed your decision
realizing what the irreparable harm would be to this policy.
That I would not change my decision. As I said, the question stands whether the language would have caused irreparable harm. And in retrospect, I believe we made the right choice because the council could have sacrificed that the language was illegal. So the council actually reaffirmed what I did by saying that irreparable harm could have taken place because the students would have exposed something that was in fact inaccurate and impartial and a violation of the bylaws.
Also, we have that, like it's a really good question, but like, I'm seeing, like, a paradigm of the district council for the functional officer versus graduate center. I like to discourage you from that paradigm because it's simply not true, it's simply not valid. The decision wasn't made out of disrespect to the graduate assembly. On the contrary, I'm not going to discuss it because you just have to be respect to graduate assembly. But the thing is, irreparable harm was what folks do. So it wasn't a matter of like, let's do a GA and not let the kids have time. You don't think students are going. On the contrary, I can actually tell you, the decision was expected to be doing that exactly. We want students to see it. The problem is, in order for students to see it, there's a process that has to follow. It's a process. Again, 4.3 mandates that you must first have the technical link is legal. Why? It has to be fair and accurate. So students sort of reflect itself. So the judicial council did not like remove it and say, you know what, we don't want this title to come up. The judicial council wants to want students to commit. They don't want to turn anything. They want the students to commit. They want the students to look at something legal.
So,
okay,
no
cross
debate.
Sorry.
Is there anything else you want to add on the answer?
So,
all right. I have a question first. Way of thinking though, and this is where I have a chance to have a was there any reason to believe that the GA respect to the GA recommendation is still valid with regards to what you identified as and what they were doing? So in this sense, were you just continuing what you had decided at 7 out of 9 justices at 1:30 when you changed the actual instruction at the beginning? Or I think it was 6, because when reading the first word of 6, I see no other reason but just like it to vote. It is get off the attention of this administration to meddle in a socially given picture of the election. It didn't change the referendum. It didn't change the actual language. So therefore, do you feel that you're continuing the decision that you already previously made at 1:30 in the morning? Or were you making a new decision? Therefore, should all of the council be on trial right now? Should you be continuing that decision? Should every justice that maintains the same distinction, the same official at 1:30 in the morning, giving the injunction, be on trial right now for all of you? So that's what I, in the sense, that's how I'm responding to the question.
Well, I think
there's
two questions. And one very important is what was the intent of the executive order? What was the consequence of the executive order? And the consequence of the executive order cannot be faced all of the questions that are back on the ballot. Is there a penalty less than the legal form and irreparable harm would have been done? So the arguments in the executive order are relevant to that. All I was concerned with was what was the order to take place and whether that but where did the charge go to charge sheet? And it's alleged that President Lindsay overstepped his authority to be an Article 2 of the Constitution. So there was a potential violation. The fact survived a constitutional violation. So I consider those to be in that where you're a lawyer, but I can't seem to state that when that's an obvious step. But, like I said, I don't actually think about that.
Actually, I was wrong. But also, my question is kind of something about the question. If you didn't consider taking the referendum from ballot, shouldn't you have to the question or at least a letter of disappointment to the lawyer for referendum?
Well,
so the prosecution would like to come up and make 2 points that this is the case for both so far. So, violation of due process. Jessica Winterhalter, on the morning of May 5th, 2005, called ECC Angel Simon and told her not to put the referendum on the ballot. However, 2 minutes later, or 5 minutes later, or 9:11 a.m., clearly after voting had started, and clearly after she had told Angel Simon not to put those referendums on the ballot, she sends out an email saying, "Hereby, I ask the referendum to be removed from the ballot by launching this injunction." Now, I don't know about you, but that's a clear violation of due process in my eyes, especially considering the fact that she told Angel Simon before the fact to remove the ballot. I don't think Angel Simon would have done something so lightly as to remove the ballot unless Jessica Unterhalter was making direct orders to the ECC. And that's just my opinion, of course, but also do realize that the ECC is also responsible for making sure the elections go as planned, as ordered. You need to have a clear verification that the injunction existed. Now, I know that the defense counsel was trying to argue earlier that you don't have to have any kind of standard basis off to which to launch an actual injunction. He said earlier that you could launch it verbally if you wanted, and inadvertently, even though she didn't know that she was launching an injunction, what she called Angel Simon, she was launching an injunction, and therefore that's standard proof enough. Prosecution doesn't buy that. Prosecution does not buy that. Because if you introduce this kind of precedent for the AACC, in which after the fact, you can make up new rights that had never existed before, nobody had ever mentioned before, nobody had ever said before, and said to you that, you know what, you could do this now, even though we didn't do it in the past, and we had never talked about it in the past, and we never actually, you know, had rules for it in the past, but hey, you can do it now because it's something that we just invented. That is a horrible precedent to set to the AACC. Not only due to the fact that the AACC should be an organization that runs off the rules that it is based off of, but the fact that it needs to be a clear delineation of what the rules, responsibilities, and privileges of being a member of the association actually is. Now, I want to talk to you about the legality of about this point of the EPI. Was the adequate reason plateau reached? She did not read EO number 6. She did not consult anyone else except for the charge sheet. Now, defense counsel is going to come up and say, she didn't have to consult anything other than the charge sheet. But I'm going to tell you right now, by not consulting EO number 6, by not reading the reasoning as to why Misha Leibovich wrote EO number 6, and to ignore the fact that EO number 6 was specifically written in response to that injunction, and those reasons were clearly ignored because the defendant never read them in the first place. So if you can't have that kind of argument where EO number 6 is clearly something that should have been read in the first place and shouldn't have been taken for granted by the justice. Now, the defense counsel is going to make the argument and point that they already knew that the results of EO number 6 was going to be to put the ballot referendum back on the ballot. However, prosecution believes what's more important in this case is also the fact that you need to have reasons for that ballot to be put, for that referendum to be put back on the ballot. To do so willy-nilly, to do so without any reason whatsoever, to do so without looking at the whereas clauses of EO number 6, is fundamentally denying the rights of Misha Leibovich as a member of this association. Now, we go into the greater issue of the actual referendum itself. I mean, the referendum itself was a result of 1 year of negotiation between the presidents of the AACC and presidents of the GA. It not only passed through the Senate by 2/3 vote, it was also approved by the Attorney General, and then it was approved by the Chancellor's representative. Now, I'd like to refer you right now to the Quayle-Hillig election bylaw, Article 10, Section 3, submission to the Attorney General. Prior to adoption by the Senate or the Graduate Assembly, the Attorney General shall certify that the question is an impartial and accurate description of the proposal being the referenda, and shall assign the referendum an official name. If the initiative is a constitutional amendment or creates a bylaw, the Attorney General shall prepare an official summary of the referendum. The Attorney General shall confer with the Chancellor or his designee for approval of language on question of student fees. Now, if the J Council had believed the referenda was illegal in the first place, after the point of EO number 6, you should have directed the Attorney General into investigating whether or not the ballot was clearly not impartial and an accurate description. of the actual referendum. Now, I'm here before you right now.
I'm fine.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yes. Judicial Rules of Procedure 2.1.2 gives the Judicial Council the exclusive authority to interpret all issues of the agency constitution. It is irrelevant what the executive order contains with respect to the constitution, with respect to new arguments. That's for its hearing. The Judicial Council has already issued an injunction. Justice Unterhalter's EPI simply stated the EO in favor of the initial injunction to begin with. The injunction was not illegal as the prosecution argues. The prosecution argues that Justice Unterhalter gave a direct order to Angel Brewer and that sets precedent. First of all, this is not a precedent-setting hearing. This is not a hearing. This is a removal hearing. This is an impeachment hearing. This is not going to set a precedent. Things that set precedent are cases that the Judicial Council hears. That sets precedent. This does not. The precedent here is whether or not you're going to remove Justice Unterhalter for legitimate grounds or for illegitimate grounds. Legitimate grounds is, did she violate due process? The answer is no. So did she order Chair Brewer? No. She issued an EPI. She issued an emergency preliminary injunction. In cross-examination, the prosecution read the words, I hereby issue. Absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct. I hereby issue. What is an emergency preliminary injunction? It is for any single justice to hereby issue blah, 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 blah. That's precisely what Justice Unterhalter hereby issued. I hereby issue. Had she had the authority to do it herself? Because of JRP 3.8.1. Wow, already. She hereby issued that. Not only that, she didn't hereby issue at 9/11. That was formalizing what was already verbally said to Chair Brewer prior to the time that voting had started. So it was a formalization in writing of what was already, of an EPI that was already given. The Judicial Rules of Procedure do not prohibit that anywhere. It is not illegal. Okay. In terms of the referendum being approved by the Senate, the prosecution reads Title 4.10.3. I would urge the jurists to remember, to keep in mind, this is public information, the fact that there are pending suits regarding this very issue. It is incredibly presumptuous for anybody to say that everything was perfectly followed. That is not true. Suits are right now being tried in front of the Judicial Council in order to determine whether or not, for instance, the Attorney General saw the text of language. We know that the text of language itself was already illegal, but whether or not all the processes were followed, namely the AG seeing it, that's a pending suit from the Judicial Council right now. So, wow. So, one cannot say that that was already followed. I'm sorry. No, please do it. In terms of setting a new status quo, the prosecution argued that Justice Unterhalter set a new status quo. Again, factually incorrect. What is a status quo? Title 4, Article 10, Point 3 tells us what the status quo is. Students have to be untainted. Students have to be shown an impartial and accurate question. That's the status quo. The original injunction preserved that status quo. The executive order issued by President Leibovich went against that status quo. So Justice Unterhalter did not create a new status quo. She upheld and preserved the status quo delineated in the bylaws. Okay. I'd just like to remind just a few general points. I feel like you guys have got most of this. We've been doing this for hours now. Whether or not the senators agree, whether or not the jurists agree with the Judicial Council, whether or not they agree with the decision that was made, whether or not they agree with the injunction, is not with that issue here. What's at issue here, as in Title 21, is Title 21, Article 2.1.5, failing to adhere to JRP, to establish rules and procedures. Not whether you agree with the injunction or not. Was procedure followed? Was the process that is due followed? Yes, it was. Justice Unterhalter, compliant with the Council's unanimous decision, issued an EPI, which is the exact same as the original PI. I'd like to also turn your attention the issue of accessibility. How Justice Unterhalter found out that an executive order had been sent out is, again, not grounds for impeachment. That's not relevant here. However she found out is irrelevant. She would have taken the same action regardless. The fact that it was issued was grounds enough for her to issue an EPI. It doesn't matter how she found out. And it doesn't matter to this hearing. If it matters in general, it's a separate issue for the ASGC to take up in terms of accessibility. So please vote on the relevant issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
So ending's not going to make or break it, you know that.
1 minute recess. It's actually not in the JRP for their speed time limit, but if we would like them, there can be. So how about 10 minutes?
How about 5?
Second.
Objection.
Okay, so, Mr.
Would it be possible if an informal cap as we've done in similar situations, so we make it 10 minutes, and if necessary, we can extend that time?
Okay, second. I mean, we can't really take motions, but that's considered in short, 10 minute informal time. Cool. Anybody want to speak? Great. Okay. So from here, we will have a question. He's getting to
Mr. Narek? Yes. Did you ever explicitly order in your conversation with her in the morning at like 9:06 or 9:05, whatever time it was, did you ever explicitly order a lettuce chair, angel bird, and pull the referee to off the dial?
I said, right,
clients
wait in the
question, so you want me to not referendum on, and you said yes. So in effect, that just contradicts what I say.
Well, I understand your question. I guess I have more clear on that. But she was just she wanted to be sure that she understood what I was saying. I never explicitly said I ordered you to give those assistance. I said I am as currently as possible. I just told me that about momentarily. This is what I'm saying. And she said I'm in a hurry. Voting is bound to start. So you, I shouldn't put them on the ballot.
This is Holly. Without reading Executive Order 6, did you feel you comprehensively understood what it meant to be?
Yes. Okay, sorry. Yes, it was clear that the effect would be what the question got.
But although she doesn't have to be longer, whether or not it's the defense counsel and calling attention to your argument on GRP which talks about the review of charge sheets and the testing of the state. I just like to call attention to the additional state where it outlines constitutional provisions. Do you believe if a part of constitutional provisions as he outlined in his charge sheet about urgent and necessary, do you believe in addition to that, that he possibly simplifies the constitutional provisions for 3.6.2.3?
This actually is irrelevant because it's long. Sorry. It's like about a different thing. It's about initiating the hearing process. Go back to this for a little bit and then raise another question.
Or,
and
they brought that up.
Nobody has brought that up. That's like the initiation of the hearing process, not the actual procedure. So, okay, we'll move on.
When the entire district council struck the referendum, they ruled that leaving them on could cause irreparable harm, and they take that to their decision. Do you personally disagree with this decision?
Question that matters in my personal preference. Okay, but to tell the truth, though, I mean, any time you have something where student voting is considered irreparable harm, that kind of boggles me. But, you know, that just means for
me. Following up on that.
I actually wanted to respond to your objection of delicacy with Senator Lopez's question. So, I think what we're talking about is 3.6.2.2.
Actually, I'd like to speak on behalf of the chair at this point.
3.6, I'm sorry, can we get
3.6.2.2. So this is going to be the council on finding for conditions for that. And this actually came up at one point. The defense discussed this, I believe, when she mentioned what constituted accepting both the preliminary injunction on behalf of the COI, on behalf of the J Council, and then accepting the ECI.
I'd like to make a defense to the chair.
Just right off the bat, I just don't remember if this is exactly brought up as an argument or
the objection already has been made, the objection already has been ruled upon. So if you want to make another question at future time, I know what section you're referring to. However, if you raise another relevant objection right now, it's you, because she already made the objection. She already ruled on it, and we've already moved on to the next question. So just like put yourself in the future.
Yes, sir, Bob.
I'll just say what they said. They based their argument or whatever they said on the factual allegations from 3.6.2.2.2, that the factual allegations, and I heard it, specifically factual allegations, constitute violations of the Constitution, not showing the regular conditions stated on the charge sheet. And what stated on the charge sheet was that urgent or necessary. What I was asking was that include, in addition to urgent and necessary, does that include the due process of the person writing the PO? Does that provide what's under the constitutional provision, under the charge sheet, to be considered to put the EPI into order?
Article 2, dealing with the executive order. So that was what I am counsel to require for the executive order.
be required to look at whether those allegations about that action, which is sort of factual action, constitute liability. The constitution of the charge is being brought before. If there was another charge that somebody would like to follow up and say, you know, I issued charge sheet, everything was litigation, then bring a charge at that point and consider other types of violations. So we're just descriptive towards the on charge before we consider such any other argument brought forth.
Yes.
I understand that there was a late phase process, and I understand that many people worked very hard to put these referenda on the ballot. But that is irrelevant. What's relevant is whether they were legally on the ballot. And unfortunately, the council found that they were. But I do respect and applaud the efforts of the local staff who put them on. So I just would like to say that that was not something that was not relevant. But what was relevant was the fact that there are laws that we are obligated to follow. And in this case, I believe we did, and I did, and was well within my rights as certified at the JRP. And there are only six things you can remove me for, and I think the one question here is whether I follow the rules of procedure. I think that's true for the right.
All right.
Well, so from here, thank you everybody for your questions. I guess it's exciting. So from here, according to Article 5.10, or according to Article 5.1.1 for the judgment, after hearing the council shall discuss and consider the case and close deliberation in order to arrive at a decision by tomorrow. It's already tomorrow. But according to the Constitution, according to Article 9, Section 1, closed session, there are six different categories or reasons for why we can move into a closed session. I personally feel that we can move into a closed session. So is there anybody that wants to object to me or do anything? Get the yell to do anything? I think. Okay. So from here, the chair would like to move into a closed session. Is there a motion?
Second.
Is there a motion? In order to move into deliberation, according to Article 5.1.1 in the JRP, it says that the council shall discuss and consider the case in close deliberation in order to arrive at a decision. So we are now in closed session. Is it relevant to consider the fact that says an open hearing in the Constitution under Article 6? It's actually kind of funny because there's three different parts in the Constitution, or in all of this, that cross over, so which basically means it's up to the discretion of the chair. That's my personal discretion, but I basically left time for anybody who wants to disagree. But, so yeah, that's the implication that I felt. So, okay, so that means we move into closed session. If there are any people in the room that are not elected officials, you must wave goodbye and thank you for being here all night. Seriously.